history of Florida explorers as America celebrates 250 years. You're listening to The Wrap from Central Florida Public Media. I'm Brendan Byrne. For centuries, people have come to Florida looking beyond the horizon. Indigenous people navigated its waterways. European explorers crossed oceans to reach its shores. And today, astronauts launch from our space coast to destinations beyond Earth. As America marks its 250th anniversary this year, we're bringing you conversations from our community, exploring what that milestone means from a Central Florida perspective. That story ahead on The Wrap. The big stories this week from Central Florida Public Media. But first, these headlines. The Immigration Detention Center in the Everglades, dubbed Alligator Alcatraz, may be closing, but as WUSF's Megan Bowman reports, groups suing to shut down the facility say they want to make sure it not only closes, but that something like this can't happen again.
Immigration and Customs Enforcement says the detainees at the detention center have been transferred. But Jessica Namath has been watching the front gates and says it's still business as usual.
They're bringing in jet fuel and buses are going in and out, and you have, you know, hundreds of cars driving on and off site.
Attorney Paul Schwepp says it'll take a lot to put the site back to normal, and he hopes to get more definitive answers when they go back to court sometime this month.
And we're not going to be done until the lights are off, the fences is down, the tents are gone, and there's a commitment that it will not be rebuilt.
The case goes back to the judge who ordered the facility to close last year. It was overturned on appeal. I'm Megan Bowman in Tampa.
St. Cloud State Representative Paula Stark says she plans to sue after state officials determined she failed to qualify for this year's election. The District 47 Republican has held that seat for 4 years, but the Florida Division of Elections says it didn't receive her required financial disclosure form by the close of qualifying on Friday, rendering her ineligible to appear on the ballot. Stark says she submitted that form electronically and followed the law. She says her campaign discussed her options with a State Department official on Monday.
So what we've been told is we will not be on the ballot, and the only way we can do that is to hire an attorney and take the Division of Elections to court so that a judge can make the decision to put me on the ballot. So that is what we are doing.
Stark said she has a list of attorneys in Tallahassee who could represent her. A decision would need to be rendered quickly, with the primary election about 2 months away. Unless she can reverse the decision, a Democrat will claim the district seat. Another sloth from the Sloth World attraction previously planned for Orlando is dead, marking the 57th death of an animal tied to the exhibit. As Central Florida Public Media's environment reporter Molly Durr explains, 8 sloths still remain in the care of the Central Florida Zoo and Botanical Gardens.
Zoo representatives announced Willow's death Tuesday with, quote, a heavy heart. She was the first sloth to die at the zoo in just over a month, since baby Mr. Ginger died there on May 15th. The zoo in late April took in 13 sloths from the so-called Sloth World exhibit, which was planned but ultimately canceled following reporting that raised widespread concern about the sloths' poor living conditions and dozens of animal deaths. Sloths are sensitive animals with highly specific dietary needs and slow metabolisms, which can delay the onset of symptoms. The zoo's medical team says while most of the sloths have made good progress there, none initially arrived in good shape from Sloth World's warehouse. 8 sloths remain in the zoo's care behind the scenes. They're not accessible to the public. Meanwhile, leading sloth experts are pushing for Florida to enact stronger protections for the animals, including a ban on direct contact sloth encounters. Molly Durig, Central Florida Public Media.
These stories and more on our website. Visit cfpublic.org. Orlando playwright and performer Brandon Martin brings his musical Lenox Avenue to the Dr. Phillips Center for the Performing Arts this weekend. It's set during the 1920s Harlem Renaissance and revolves around poet and civil rights advocate Langston Hughes.
He pulled together the different threads of the African diaspora, of the Black American experience, and it's just great poetry.
Hear more on Spotlight. Get it where you get this podcast. America is marking its 250th anniversary this year, and on Engage, we're bringing you weekly conversations from our community, exploring what that milestone means from a Central Florida perspective. For centuries, people have come to Florida looking beyond the horizon. Indigenous people navigated its waterways. European explorers crossed oceans to reach its shores. And today, astronauts launch from our space coast to destinations beyond Earth. While many conversations about America's founding focus on the original 13 colonies, historian Ben Brotmarkle says Florida's story of exploration goes back long before the United States existed. He spoke with Central Florida Public Media's Engage host, Sharon Stone, about Florida's history of exploration.
Well, I think exploration really starts earlier than that. You know, people have been living here for 15,000 years, and those people, you know, came across the Bering Strait during the Ice Age, we believe, and made their way down into Florida. So they walked all across North America until they came to Florida. And we have a fascinating history of indigenous people here. Back then, Florida was three times wider than it is now. So a lot of these sites where people lived are now in the Gulf of Mexico. We know that there's sites there that have been found underwater now, as well as all the great archaeology that's going on land. So I would say that exploration really started with those first people in Florida.
How should we think about the people who were already here before the Europeans started arriving?
At the time of European contact in the 1500s, there were literally dozens of different tribal groups, sophisticated tribal groups with complex cultures living here. There were the Apalachee up in the Panhandle who were great farmers, and they built a council house that could hold more than 1,000 people. There were the Colusa in Southwest Florida, who were a very powerful warrior tribe who demanded tributes from other tribes throughout Florida. And the Tequesta, you know, they had a big city at the mouth of the Miami River. So there are, like I say, dozens of these tribes speaking different languages, different religious beliefs. By the time the Europeans came, there was a lot of European contact once it started. Primarily the Spanish, of course. You know, Juan Ponce de Leon gave our state its name in 1513, but he was not successful at establishing a permanent European settlement here. He tried. He came back in 1521, but was repelled by the Colusa. They were kind of ready for him and mortally wounded him, even though he had brought a bunch of settlers and livestock and all sorts of things. There were other attempts after him. Probably the closest was Don Tristan de Luna up in what is now Pensacola in 1559. He brought all of these ships into Pensacola Bay. 1,500 settlers was going to establish a colony, but was not expecting a hurricane. You know, we didn't have newscasters, you know, warning us weeks in advance that something might be coming. And so all of his ships sunk in Pensacola Bay. So a few years later, the French came, first in 1562, and then in 1564, they established Fort Caroline in what's the Jacksonville area. And of course, the Spanish were very unhappy about this because they had claimed La Florida, as they called it, which was at that time most of the southeastern United States, really. They claimed that as Spanish territory. So they weren't happy about the French settlement. On top of that, they were Protestant Huguenots. And the Spanish, of course, were Roman Catholic. So they saw these French not only as invaders, but as heretics. And so they sent Don Pedro Menendez de Avilés to Florida to wipe out the French, which he did. And he was the one who established the first permanent European settlement in what is now the United States at St. Augustine. Later, we had British, you know, the British control of Florida. You know, this is, we're celebrating America 250. And for the entire period of the American Revolution from 1763 to 1783, the British controlled Florida. It was a loyalist stronghold for British loyal to the king to come to Florida to escape from the colonies to the north if they didn't want to participate in the American Revolution. After the revolution ended, Florida was turned back over to the Spanish. And as the late, great Florida historian Mike Gannon used to say, it'll be the year 2056 before an American flag has flown over Florida longer than a Spanish flag. But eventually, of course, Florida did become a United States territory in 1821 and a state in 1845. So that's when the Florida Crackers, mostly people of Scott-Irish descent, started coming down from Georgia and the Carolinas and settling Florida.
When we talk about the people who settled and shaped Florida over the centuries, where do people of African descent fit into the story?
Well, interestingly, people of African descent were among the first people, first non-indigenous people to set foot in Florida. Every one of those Spanish ships that came in the 1500s and 1600s had people of African descent on board. the Spanish had a much different system of slavery than the British did. The Spanish, as awful as it was, their slavery was not race-based, and you could work yourself out of that situation. So there were many people of African descent, some free. They weren't all enslaved that came with the Spanish. There were people that were very valued crew members. Juan Garrido was one of the first, who was a person of African descent to come to Florida. And they were scouts and guides and translators and very valued crew members. And beyond that, I mean, you know, Florida has always been kind of a haven for people of African descent. Fort Mosse was established in 1738 as the first legally sanctioned Black settlement in what would become the United States. It was set up to protect St. Augustine. It's just north of St. Augustine. And so it was the first line of defense for British coming into Spanish Florida. The town of Eatonville, you know, was the first incorporated African-American municipality in the United States, certainly one of the first, entirely governed by African-Americans. And it was established in 1887. So people of African descent, like all of these other folks we've been talking about, from the indigenous people and all the different Europeans, also came to Florida seeking a new life, seeking, exploring, if you will, a new life and discovering a different way of living. In the Seminole Wars of the 1800s, people of African descent who were enslaved would escape into Florida and join the Seminole people. There's a whole group of Black Seminoles who were, again, valued members of the tribal groups here in Florida.
So it sounds like Florida wasn't just a place that people were moving through. It was a place that people built lives. Is that fair?
Absolutely. We've been talking about Florida as a catalyst for exploration, but it was also the people who came here exploring often found what they were looking for and established permanent settlements here and permanent communities, that many of which still exist today.
Florida is showing up again and again on the edge of the unknown. My question to you is, why Florida? What made this place a gateway?
Its location geographically was very important to Europeans, especially the British, who were trying to control North America. You know, we think of the 13 colonies when we're talking about early America, but of course, Florida were the 14th and 15th colonies, because the British broke it into East Florida with the capital in St. Augustine and West Florida with the capital in Pensacola. From the British perspective, Florida was a very strategic place. We also have the Gulf Stream, which allowed ships to catch that Gulf Stream and propel them to Europe. So it was an important trade route for the indigenous people and others that came after. Florida's kind of the last place to go. I mean, it's at the hanging off the end of the United States, and there you can't go any further. So from the indigenous people all the way to people going to Key West looking for a different, you know, type of lifestyle, that's as far as you can go.
When we're talking about Florida's history, from the indigenous people navigating the waterways to the Spanish explorers you were talking about crossing the oceans, and I want to talk to you more about just astronauts launching from the Space Coast, but do you see just a common thread in all of these explorers?
I think that it's just human nature to explore and to discover and go as far as you can. And all of these people had different motivations for that, but I think it's almost like a primal thing for all human beings.
So a reason that this idea resonated with me is because of how much we cover the Space Coast. When we're thinking about this conversation in Florida history, I'm noticing a comparison between people launching themselves into the unknown from this peninsula for centuries to astronauts launching themselves into the unknown for Florida. Is that kind of a fair comparison?
I think so. I think that spirit of that same spirit of exploration that brought people here walking across a continent to get to Florida, and then the Europeans, mostly the Spanish, but also the French and the British, setting sail, not knowing what exactly they were going to find. You know, that imagine the spirit that must take to get on a boat and then travel across the ocean, not even knowing what you were going to hit. The first explorations into space had that same kind of faith, you know, in exploration, because the computers on those first Apollo missions weren't as complicated as what's in your cell phone. I mean, we carry around in our pocket more sophisticated computer power than they had on those original manned missions into space. So it takes a lot of spirit, a lot of passion for discovery and exploration to be one of the first people that comes here, one of the Europeans that sail here, and the people that get on those ships and get blasted into space. Every important manned mission into space has been launched from right here from Florida at Cape Canaveral. And it's so interesting, I think, because Cape Canaveral is one of the earliest European place names on any map. And so that shows that end of exploration. And then it's also the site of all of our manned exploration and launches into space. It's just an incredible kind of bookends of this period of exploration for human beings, really an amazing time.
That was Sharon Stone speaking with Ben Brotmarkle. He's executive director of the Florida Historical Society and host of the weekly show Florida Frontiers that airs Thursday nights at 6:30 on Central Florida Public Media. That's it for The Wrap this week. This podcast is produced by Central Florida Public Media with editorial assistance from news director LaToya Dennis. I'm Brendan Byrne. This is The Wrap.